Okay. We're discussing. Consciousness, and I think we can take some questions now and try and clear up. If you have any questions, so we can go over these questions and clear it up. Do you have any questions you want to ask? Or what notes you've been taking? Karma is the law of spiritual accountancy. You can't account for anything, even in the minutest way in our home or business. You can't operate it without accounting for it, lest you live in the mental state of loss. The mind must make an account for all its actions. Since the mind does this, this principle is referred to as karma, as the divine economics, as the cosmic economics, the cosmic accountancy, the Huntley Brinkley system of universe. When you get on the TV, you see this, they give you the breakdown or the accounting of what is done by the nation. So karma is that accounting of the things that we do with the energy in the world. We are energy, and we have consciousness, and we have to account for it in our consciousness. We can't live without accounting. So by virtue of this, we experience this law of cause and effect, of sowing, of reaping, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. It is simply the universal economics of accounting for every action. We ourselves make this action work when we come into manifestation. This action is presented to us as a system of keeping the record straight. So there is no action performed by any entity that is not karma. Every action that is performed by any entity is karma, and therefore it is neither good nor bad. It is a way to account for its actions. It's a way to account for the use of the energy. Now this accountancy is divided in three levels or categories, just like a banking system. You have your savings, you have your checking, and you have your investments. That is your past, your present, and your future actions. Your past actions are your savings, which determine your present body. The present body is the result of those past actions, which were savings, and you can't have all of your savings used up because some are kept in reserve. And the bills that are come due, that you have to account for in checking or paying off, which is being experienced in the form of aches and pains or compensations of grace. Now the mind also craves, because it's living for a futuristic experience of release. And in craving for some release, it thinks during those moments of ease, it will take a chance to build something. This is called the investment. This is the futuristic action. So we invest our actions in time, because we expect to be the recipient of those actions. If I buy a house on the time payment plan, I expect to pay for it off and own it. And if I don't pay it off and I die before the time comes due, that's an unfinished karmic action. Regardless, it's simply a business association with another human being and a commitment. That is karma too. I have performed an action with my bodily energy and a bodily commitment to the mind, and did not live through physically to end it. Therefore, the mind cannot live in a state of limbo. It must make an accounting for itself, so it wants to make restitution. It cannot leave the loved ones to whom are involved, so it yearns to return to make the compensation. Therefore, since we are not the recipients of the futuristic investments of the action, we return. This is called the unfinished desire. The prime purpose of our existence, the prime purpose of coming back to the body to work it out. So our futuristic actions, our investments, prepare us for rebirth. And those futuristic actions, when we reborn, are called savings now, or past actions. It's a cycle in time, from past, present, future, constantly going in spirals.
So what you reap that is good now can be not only the past, but some of the present that you've been living, I mean some of this lifetime.
Yes, what you reap can be of the past and can be of the present lifetime, so this is compensatory. So the law of karma is not an evil or a good law. It is the law of divine accountancy for the conscious use of the action which the entity finds itself in time and space. We are the entity, we are the force field or the being who takes a physical form, takes the responsibility and commitment to use this energy. And since by virtue of our mind, we cannot leave loose ends. You know this instinctively, let alone you know it subconsciously and you know it intuitively, that you cannot leave a loose end in consciousness. So, by this principle, you are constantly performing karma. You are performing action. Now, since we're performing action, that is breeding more action, then we want to be free from the repetition of the action. So then the mind would try to find a solution in which action must be performed where there is no interest accruing and where there is no cashing in or checking out is accruing. And that action, which is performed with that attitude, is called divine will, or predestined act. God's will is predestined. He has a rhythm or a system for his universe to go along a certain way. We have to come and follow the instructions by virtue of humility to live it out and to learn to follow the instructions.
How can you keep negative thoughts?
How can we keep negative thoughts out of the mind? By repeating Simran, doing the Simran all the time. That is japa or repetition or hallowing the holy name. To take a word and repeat it over and over. And the best way to do it, since these words, these Sanskrit words, do not mean much to us at times. Repetition is the meaning of the word. And take your own name and it becomes Sanskrit when you repeat it backwards. What is your name? Spell your name backwards.
H-C-I-E-Y.
Well, pronounce it now.
Well,
if you pronounce it repeat it backwards, then you got a nice Sanskrit word. See, it's not written. Sanskrit, not written. It's not written. And take your name, what did you get? So repeat it backwards. Lord Tennyson did his backwards, and he realized himself. Alfred Tennyson was his name, so he took it and repeated backwards. The principle has nothing to do with the words. It has to do with your attitude and the repetition. So as Krishnamurti would say, Coca-Cola, Coca-Cola, Mercedes-Benz, Mercedes-Benz, Honda, 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 Honda. Anything you want, repeat it over and over, and your mind would be free from the distractions.
How can you work out karma in your dreams?
Hmm?
How can you work out karma?
How can you work out karma in your dreams?
Yeah, you
It's not for you to work it out in your dream. It happens for you in the dream, so it's freeing you from the...
Oh, we don't have that.
You have no say in the matter in the dream. You simply live it out. In a dream, you know you're dreaming. And something has happened to you in a dream and you don't like it, open your eyes.
That isn't easy.
That is what?
That isn't easy.
That is easy if you hallow the name of the Lord, because you're supposed to be always hallowing the name of the Lord in sleeping, waking, dreaming, meditating, dying and resurrecting and reincarnating.
Last night wasn't like this.
You're not supposed to go away with your mind from any point of the holy name in the whole universe to maintain your center.
I couldn't open when you said slow your breath. I couldn't open it.
Repeat the holy name over and over.
I couldn't get out of it until you started talking.
Right. Repeat it over and over till you get the control that you can open your eyes and shut it. So you repeat it over and over to get it to the mind to stay there.
Are there various rhythms?
The rhythms is synchronized to the brain beat, which is synchronized to the pulse of the blood. And that's all the rhythm there is. It is set already. You have nothing to do with it.
Is everyone's different?
Very slight variations depending upon that. Very slight variations because of the pulse beat in the heart. So we are not too off from everybody. We're all in the same strata.
Should we keep records of our dreams? This is important. It's so time consuming to try to analyze them. It's just maybe right.
Keeping records of our dreams is only good to entertain the mind.
Soon you have to come to the point where you don't dream.
You must come to the point where you don't dream. And then you must come to a development where you dream and you want to dream. See? Dreaming is unconscious exposure to unfinished thought patterns, which you have no control over. And therefore you're a victim to it and can be subject to hallucinations. When you reach the point where you don't dream, and you can stop all dreaming in the mind, then for the first time your mind is empty. You have self-realization. Then when you're competent enough to dream at will what you want to dream, then you have God-realization.
Well, should we kind of set up the computer then that it would be good for us health-wise, at our state of development, if we try to, you know, before we go to sleep with the holy name, say not to dream.
When you go to sleep, you're supposed to be meditating first and then reach the high state of meditation and then go to sleep repeating the holy name so that you are in the dreamless state.
Well, when I get awake, this name is coming through me, but the experience
must be there all the time, because this is what they call a hallowed be the name. Unceasing prayer. Unceasing prayer. There can be no end in the mind to pray for or do or think it. This must go on. This power must work inside. This is the power that draws everything. This is the constancy of the spirit. This is the devotion. See, the mind wants to make all kind of games to avoid doing it.
Yeah, I found that out in the past week.
See, that's why we have the retreat, to prove to ourselves that how the mind is running the spirit, and the spirit is a slave to the mind, when in reality the mind should be a slave to the spirit or the soul.
It's a fun game. I mean, now we understand it.
Well, we play games with ourselves all the time.
I mean, after watching them,
mind games, this is all the thing.
But you figure we're raised, the kids, I mean, you know, they're raised, you know, well, your mind, I mean, never, it was never taught to train your mind. I mean,
who will teach you to train your mind as who will teach you to train your spirit? Right now, in the last 30 or 40 years, people born looking to train their mind. There ain't nobody know much about the mind. A few people come out to give some insight to the mind. Then we got a whole host of courses on mind training. In the meantime, when we're getting proficient in it, somebody's coming out and tell us how to train the spirit. 40 years from now, we're going to say to ourselves, why didn't we learn about the spirit when we got caught up in the mind?
Yeah. Well, you got to respect
the use of the Holy Rosary in the Catholic Church really had a good meaning. Or it's been criticized a lot, you know, that Catholics were repeating it, not knowing what they were saying. But it did have something to it, didn't it?
anytime we don't understand the principle of the spiritual life, simply because we logic and reason and analysis and experiment has heightened the ego, we are quick to condemn the simplicity of things that lead to the spiritual life. It's because we do not understand and we do not have those experiences. We are shut out from those experiences by our ego. The ego tends to insulate us from the spirit all the time. So our criticism of the Catholic or the Buddhist or any of those individuals who are involved in the simple alignment of their spirit by the simple method cannot understand the experiences that occur. And there are labels for the experiences because there is no way for the logical, analytical mind to accept it. Because the logical, analytical mind is not spiritual. It's barren. That's why Omar Khayyam called the reason a barren object. I have divorced all barren reason. This was a statement he made. Barren reason, something that is barren, is not fruitful. And took the daughter of wine to spouse, which is intuition. Wine is the spirit. The daughter of the wine is intuition, that subtle nature, that subtle function of the spiritual force in us is intuition. It's the extrasensory principle. And to spouse means to become aligned with it, to identify with it. He no longer identified his mind with reason. He aligned his mind and identified with intuition. So he was making sure or pointing out that reason will never really satisfy spirit, but only satisfy ego. It cannot satisfy the spirit, because the spirit is not a limiting force. The spirit is a all omnidirectional force. It's an all-directional force. Therefore, there is no limitation to it. But ego is a limited force because it wants to exert control or breaking, putting the brakes on the behavior and nature of the spirit. It does not want to surrender and flow with the spirit. If we can't explain things to ourselves, it does not exist. And when we could explain it to ourselves, we still don't believe it. That's the ego. Mm-hmm. See? It's a peculiar mechanical function locked up in us. So that's the way it works. But once you understand how it works, then you don't give it much credence. You will learn the humility of flowing with life. Clears up the questions.
You still have to live it in experience.
Right. No amount of lectures or analysis is going to satisfy the spirit. The spirit can only be satisfied by experiential action. The value of experience, this is what it has to go through. It must go through experience. And experience is something only gained by conflict. It's not gained outside of conflict. So you can talk of planting corn. You can read of planting corn. You can buy all the seeds of corn. You can prepare the soil. Fairly insulated in consciousness can insulate themselves against it. Those who are not, they're wise to have a bracelet to offset the magnetic pull. If the body is toxic, they're the ones that are going to be affected first. Those who are less toxic are the ones who will survive it a lot from the magnetic pull. But the plant life, the animal life will be the most affected. Man would be mostly affected psychologically, because he's going to be very, very...
There'll be a lot of depression.
Right.
Will there be a greater use of drugs because of this depression?
Well, there'll be a greater deal of attention and need for tranquilization.
Will diseases become more rampant in the home then?
it will speed up. It will say it will come into, it will have much more intensified action. The chronic diseases will come stronger, and those that are acute may become chronic, will start speeding up. The period of healing the body will diminish. The ability to heal will diminish. But that doesn't say there are people who are not going to set up top ways to offset it. There's compensation. For every negative, there's a positive. And this again is a karmic intent. Who are involved to have the full brunt of it, and who are not involved to have the full brunt of it.
Well, is there
anything
that we could do for others as far as helping before or after?
It can only do.
Other than, you know, prayer and
prayer is one thing, meditation is another thing, and the food shortages are going to intensify, and the prices are going to go up, and there just ain't no way you can go down. They're not going to go backwards.
Yeah.
The cost of everything is going to go up more and more. And we are going to reach spiraling heights.
Mm-hmm. And you said, you know, in Richmond, at 1975, you really feel it.
Yeah.
There's no way you can really store a large amount of food for years, you know.
Only in special containers.
It won't be for years, it will have a second
it's
effect.
Well, see, the thing is this. You can store food, the dry foods, the stables, and certain containers that are available. We have some of them which we're trying to get more now. They just start making them. And it can store indefinitely. The Mormons have already been doing it for the last 10 years. And the Seventh-day Adventists are doing it. They've been storing. In fact, every family in the Mormon Church and the Seventh-day Adventists, as of date, has about $1,000 food stored up already. Now, when they started off storing that $1,000 worth of food, it was way back in the late 60s or early 60s and 50s. They were storing. Now, each year, food doubles its price. There's no way for it to go back. It will only fluctuate when there's a bumper crop. But in as far as the staples are going, the cost is always going up.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you could buy peas or rice at 6 and 7 cents a pound. You can't buy it at 6 and 7. It's 30 or some odd cents a pound. It's already going to 40 cents a pound, so there is no way you're going to go back to 6 cents a pound rice.
Well, are these galvanized?
No, these are plastic containers. We'll show them tomorrow to everybody. We have them there.
Where would we in other parts of the country get them there?
Well, we can ship it out to those who want it.
And how much are they?
I think they're $3.50 a piece. That's the basic price.
And then you pay for your shipping costs.
You pay for shipping costs.
Well,
it's a 5 gallon. It'll hold 5 gallons of food.
And it would have to be plastic.
It's plastic, yes, because it's light, you see. Now, it's very simple to... When we go up to the kitchen tonight, I'll show, because we want them to have it. We just got it ourselves. We've been looking for it for years. We heard of it. We couldn't get it because they tried to a lot of models that it didn't work out. And some were in the experimental stage. Now, we've got... It's reached past the experimental stage. In the last 10 years, they've been testing it, so it's proven itself for 10 years already. So it's in the stage where it is indefinite. It's produced by the Mormon Church. Their company owns it for their people. In fact, all their orders are booked up by them. We barely got in trying to buying it outside of them. And the first thing they ask you, are you a Mormon when you go to the place? Because they're designing the thing for themselves. And the All Faith, the Seventh-day Adventist is the next, because these are the only two groups that are vegetarian conducting companies. the Mormon Church and the Seventh-day Adventists, they produce the Loma Linda products. Worthington is a Mormon church product company. Worthington Company is a Mormon, see? And Loma Linda is a produced by the Seventh-day Adventists. So these two churches already have already done their work on the containers. They've dried all the stuff and tested them. So what they did, they made a container out of plastic to seal itself. And you put all your dry stuff in. First you put 2 teaspoons of dry ice at the bottom of the container. Then you fill the container a half. And then you put fill the other half, then at the halfway mark you put 2 more teaspoons of the dry ice. And in between you can add now your bay leaves. And you fill the container right up to the top. And you put another 2 teaspoons of the dry ice and put the lid on. Now as it evaporates by its own act moisture in a matter of 15 hours, it will shoot all the gas up and drive all the oxygen right through out of the whole container.
With the lid sealed?
No, the lid is not sealed, it's just resting on top. And you have to time it. It's timed for up to 12 to 15 hours.
Oh.
And then after that period is reached, then you press the lid down and it seals it. It clips, it seals it. And it will stay indefinitely because there is no way for any thing to grow or multiply in there. All the oxygen is driven out. There is no bacteria. There is no eggs to sterile, become active or reproduce. Now when you're ready to use it and you open it, do not shake the container. Dip from the container down. And that way you keep what is called a stabilized air in it. Thank you, dear sister. But the thing is this, you could never grow sufficiently enough if the air is polluted versus the time you have to eat and live and grow. Where are you going to get the food from if the crops are being destroyed by blight? Or you have a great invasion of insects or you have to use tremendous pesticides to keep them back. So it isn't that the land is not going to be there, the land is going to be there. But we have to have food to eat in the meantime to survive. And that would be spoiled and that may not be there because that may be sold already before it's even raised as a crop. And if it's raised as a crop and it doesn't come true, that's a loss too. Right now, we've already sold next year's crop. We don't own next year's crop. It's already bought by foreign countries.
Is it for us?
Well, the thing to do now is to gradually save.
Right. Not gradually.
Well, it would have to be, wouldn't it?
Well, the thing to do is to gradually start buying food and storing it. Buying it in the dried state.
You mean everything's got to be in the dried state. We just won't have fruits anymore.
No, because you see the thing, when you buy it in the cans, here is the ratio in the can. You buy the food in the can, it's 60% water and 40% solid. Therefore, how much solids are you really getting at the end for your dollar? You're not getting as much. Now when you buy your food in a dry state and all you do is add moisture to it, then it doubles or triples or quadruples.
But the only thing, trick is, how can you have enough water stored? This way at least you'd be getting some
water. So you have to store water too.
Yeah, but you need a tank like you say.
You have the plastic containers to store the water. It's not going to get polluted inside the plastic container.
No, but I mean, it takes a tremendous amount. I mean, like rice and stuff, if you have to cook that for it, that fuses up the water where you had canned food.
Oh.
That's why you had that much.
The rice. place is still there once you've have the water running through your tap. Will only be good for washing, not good for drinking, and no story for drinking. It's a waste of time to store for drinking, because you'll have to put more chloride to drink it anyhow. It's going to be polluted more. Your best thing is to have the water for shower and for washing the merchandise. But then when you want to cook, this is water you have to keep. You have to store that for the actual cooking.
Will we be out of electricity? A lot of
The electrical power is going to diminish too. We don't have enough electrical power reserves to go. Even if we got nuclear reactors to build up the trust. You see, we are taking for granted when we flip the switch and we pay the electrical company X amount of dollars at the end of the month, we got a wonderful source of supply of energy. The electrical company don't have. They have to make this energy to put it out. And they have to draw from raw resources. And if the raw resources are not replenishing themselves, we are diminishing gradually.
In other words, buy a lot of candles.
Yes, I'd say buy a lot of candles, because it'll save a lot of...
Can heat and get our old fireplace wood.
Right. Wood comes back to heat the building, and candles come back to...
Now I know why we got that house in the first place.
But as far as the city life is concerned, in the Depression, some of us that may not even recover. And this is not too far off.
Now,
we don't have to wait till it happens in a big city. In the small little towns, they are happening every day. People are running into a tremendous crisis. Take a hurricane that just went through that area. Now, you were up in the Richmond area when I was there the last time. How many days?
Well, one day I couldn't even get across the bridge. And then for the rest of the week, we could get back and forth across the bridge. Yeah. The whole week.
Now, this is just normal little calamities. This has nothing to do with big catastrophic calamities. And look at the shelves on the supermarkets, what were happening, what people were doing. You realize that the people can't go 3 or 4 days a week without food if they don't have it. What are they going to do? Think the restaurants going to make enough food to supply and they can't get it? Right now, the manufacturers have put the wholesalers on rationing already. Safeway and all these big companies cannot buy. That's what they used to buy before. They're on ration already. And they are rationing already, and the purchases are being rationed. They're telling us already. We're on ration. We got to go on ration.
Well, the rest of them are saving on the meat. But then, too, you have to store so many little things like matches. And if December is such a bad month,
it's no good money.
Someone had predicted this last year, and we stocked up pretty good, thinking it, and they just somehow must have, messed it up by 1 year.
Well, look at it this way. Regardless if you messed up or not, the food you bought last year, you couldn't pay for it this year. You couldn't move it off the shelf if you wanted to pay for it. You realize that? You can't buy it at the same price no more. It's gone up. You know which percent has gone up? Nearly 100% has gone up. You couldn't go back and buy that food. Now, let me show you simple mathematics. You put $100 in the bank in savings. At the end of the year, how much interest would you get? You can't get no more than 6 cents. To the dollar, so that'll give you $6. So you get $106 at the end of the year. You buy $100 worth of food and keep it for the 1 whole year. You know how much it's worth? You bet it's worth nearly $250 at the end of the year.
It's just like these savings funds, people, like war bonds, they think this is a big deal.
People have to eat, I don't care how you look at it. And they have to do some means to pay for it in some way. And if in the bread line or the compensation funds come out in the working, the government tries. And during the wartime, people went on what is called grow your own food campaign. But it's not going to be like in the wartime where the war is across the road or some other remote country and the air is not polluted. If you're talking pollution and insect control principles, we're talking of shifts in the changes of the weather. These are things that are already in the movement already. They're forming, going through the process. And it's a matter of getting it down into the state where you can survive the shocks until these things become stable again.
Well, then the things to store would be nuts and grains.
Yeah.
And that's it.
All your grains, all your dry products, you store all your dry products. You store everything that is dry. Dried fruit, dried grains, dried nuts, seeds, and for sprouting.
Should you take them, when you're storing them in this plastic container, should you take them out of the bag they come in?
You take it out of the bag and get it right into the plastic container and seal it up. You got it all stacked up.
So that's the same way, because they get rancid all of them. I mean, how would you do that?
The same way, you take it out and seal it up in the plastic container. Yeah. You seal it in the plastic container.
Well, then we'll
just
more or less, it's
awful
to say, but there can hardly
help anybody. We should
be on our own.
All right, then if you have, we call it, these are things you have to have. Emergency grinder that we work with our hand, that there's no electrical.
I've got one.
So if you buy corn or you're buying peas, that you can grind it and make your soup mixes, get your high protein. See. Any grain that can be ground will stretch 4 times the volume. They usually do without grinding them, they'll stretch. The moment you add water, water and the grain is the thing that the people have to have, because that's the stuff of the life in which they can survive. You may not be able to share. Your friend may be a friendly bashing your door and.
But you can't stir that much. You have too much. And how much can you do in 2 months?
It's not going to kill the planet in 2 months. The impact of the comet may affect the planet. But that's not what we're worrying about. We're worrying about the other alternate changes that will be there that we can't replace the food life.
Yeah,
so the thing is this, when that comet is gone, we're not going to worry about the comet is going to carry its impact. We have to have the survival system to exist after it's gone, while the crops are trying to revive from the impact of these magnetic waves.
It's going to be awful when you can't
help people. The hospital is in the same situation today, when you have hundreds of people coming in and they can't help them. The amount that they can turn out that they help and the amount that they can't, they're just seemingly carrying on. We can't reach the point where we, sit down helplessly and cry. We have to do the best we can with what we've got and leave the rest to the Lord in His own way. Some of us, it's all karma. It's this when you begin to realize that this is not a cold-hearted existence. It's the law of karma, how it works. Our own negativeness is putting us in these particular relationships. And we are called to realize this.
Well, should we, I'll share these tips with the initiates when I get back now, but would you advise them to tell our close friends and relatives?
They're not going to believe you. You see,
I'm not even going to convince my husband.
So
last year, we
never tell the person what is going to aggravate him because he's living in the cloud nine of security. You merely go ahead on your own and put aside a little money and store the stuff. And when the thing happens and they're in the quandary, you keep your cool and take it out and feed them. See, I learned that lesson a long time. You don't tell people the thing, because when you tell them, they're up in arms, and before you know it, you spend a whole year arguing not to do. When you could have gone ahead and do the thing, and at the end of the year, there it was, all right, who thought of it? Forget who thought about it. Use it.
Well, this is what I'm trying, you know, what to do. To help the
when this is stored with dried ice, will this be safe in an uninsulated annex?
Oh, yes.
It will be, from the heat and the cold.
It has no effect because it's not a germinate. Mm-hmm. You see, there's no germination process. It will sprout, though. But the weevils or the insect life that the eggs that were might be in it or in the grain of it in the process of the growth, they will not grow because they are already shot clean of the oxygen clearance. It comes from the bottom up all the way. The carbon dioxide pushes the whole thing out. So everything is immediately sterile or in a state of death. The food itself is healthy, but any bacterial life would be dead. So there is no way for it to multiply. Now, you intersperse it with bay leaves to keep it fragrant. Mm-hmm. And you seal it. Once it's sealed, it's indefinite. It's like your pyramid. In the days of the pyramids, they had a dream, and the Pharaoh didn't know what it was, the 7 good corn, the 7 bad corn. Then little Joe come along, and he says, man, let's build some granaries. They look like pyramids and stuff it full of corn. And in the 7 good years, everybody had corn. They didn't know why the Egyptians were getting so worried about storing it. Oh, we got lots of corn growing. Oh, we'll sell all we got to Egypt. Let them buy it up. The Egyptians weren't so dumb. They sent out all this overseas and they bought up all the corn from everybody who wanted to sell their corn. And they produced. And even the very good people for the neighbors all sold it to Egypt. And when the time came, the sudden shift in the planetary system at that time, we had 7 long years where everything was dead and barren. It was simply dry. No water was drying up. The atmospheric conditions were changing. Nothing was growing. Irrigation was done. And the only people who had dried food stored up were the Egyptians.
How long will we have to eat from stored up food? How many years?
As far as the Mormons are doing, this is what they're doing. For each family, or really they're saying each person should have a year and a half storage for supply for each person. That's a year and a half story.
You don't know how much food you're going to consume.
You don't know how much food you can consume in a year. It's very simple to check it out. How much food a person can... You know how much food a person consumes in a year? 350
pounds. 350
pounds?
Oh my. And multiply that by 7?
350 pounds of food a human being consumes per year.
What are you in an apartment? Where?
1.5 years. How is that?
350 pounds of food is not a big
per person. No.
The weight may be a big figure. The box in which that 350 pounds of food will come will not take up more than the size of this chair.
That's the one.
Oh, really?
You know what is 50 pounds of rice?
Well, I hadn't bought that much rice.
50 pounds of rice is one little sack this wide, this high. That's 50 pounds of rice. But try lifting it up. It's 50 pounds. Now, 50 pounds of flour is the same size, same height. That's 100 pounds of food you got there. Now, 50 pounds of corn, same size, same height, they're just taking up this much space on and top of each other, off the ground. The length of the bag is this, and the thickness of the bag is about this. So 1, 2, 3. That's 150 pounds. Double that, that's 300 pounds. Put on another 50 pounds, you have 350 pounds. Take some of that. In your toilet, you can store 350 pounds of food very easy. Food storage today is a negligible condition. Putting it in containers of plastic in 5 gallon bags is then they're stacked one on top of the other.
How about tin cans? We have those, we have like lard cans and stuff along, or pretzels coming in.
You could
store, buy them and store them because you buy them in boxes.
Mm-hmm. You could put dry ice so you
didn't have
whatever.
In tuna?
In cans, no.
No, you don't need dry ice once it's encased in a can.
No, no. I meant that we have metal containers at home instead of the plastic. I know we have maybe a half dozen or more.
They're lard tins.
Lard tins or pretzel tins. No,
yeah.
That would be okay.
It'll be okay, but you don't need a double insulation because it's plastic. Rats don't eat it.
Mm-hmm.
Bugs can't get into it and it doesn't corrode.
But it's safe to put grain in those.
That's where I'm going to put mine.
No, that's not wrapped in tin.
Not in tin.
No,
it must be put sealed with some kind of a plastic thing. You can get those garbage tins, you can use them.
Yeah.
But you see,
you can't seal them.
You can't seal them because if you put the dry ice, it will corrode in the metal. So it'll corrode in the metal.
The dry ice will have to be chunked up. They come in chunks, so you have to take a hammer or what and smash
it. Just smash it, take 2 teaspoons out. That's all you need for the bottom of the container, the plastic container.
Well, where
can you get your grains at wholesale price? Any place?
No, not any place.
You have to go to the nature food store?
The natural food stores are the only people who get it at wholesale. I mean, we're trying to buy it wholesale because we supply the kitchen. We do buy wholesale. So, but we can ship it out. The plastic container is reusable.
Yeah, but I mean,
if
you want to keep everyone you get a hold of, it's kind of hard to come out.
Didn't you just say you sell
some to us? Yes, because we're ordering it from the factory that is making it.
And you think you get unlimited numbers?
Till the plastic run out.
How many should I order for my
size? Well, 500, a 5 gallon box is about, it'll hold a 5 gallon whole lot of food in it. I don't know how, it depends on how much you want to put in it. If 5 gallons, there's 16 ounces to the gong, and there are 32 ounces to the quart, and there are 4 quarts to the gallon. So 4 times 32 is 128. That's 128 ounces. 5 times 128 ounces will give you what the weight of a 5 gallon container. 640 ounces. That's how many pounds?
And
well, that's a bit flour. When you take flour out of the bag,
that's 40 pounds. The flour comes in 50 pound sacks.
It would have to be
open. 50 pound sack.
Yeah. It should be open then.
Yes, it's open and emptied out.
You can lay it on the dry ice, you would put plastic down.
Put plastic inside.
Yeah,
and
it's kind of loose. I was wondering. Or
put plastic
on? Put a plastic coat on the dry ice before you get loose flour and it kind of loose food, you know. You wouldn't want to put food right on the dry ice.
Well, that's what I was wondering.
No, you put a plastic. But yeah, but that then the dry ice wouldn't go through the plastic, because the dry ice has to go into the...
Well, storing flour is going to be a little difficult. That's why they get your grinder. The grinder stores the grain, dry grain.
Do you have to put anything over the dry ice when you pour the grain in it?
No, but also because it will not affect the grain.
So it really would be best just to conserve with grains and nuts.
Right.
And leave the flour.
If you want to store that, then store it in plastic sacks, but it will keep. If you use the, take the plastic sack and put it in the container with the plastic sack, and then you put, bay leaves around the plastic sack outside, and then seal it with the container, and that will drive all air out. If you punch a few holes in the plastic to give it aeration, so that when it, and you put the plastic sack on top of the dry ice, so the dry ice will, the fumes will pass along on the flour, and it, when it turns to flour, there's very little life is in there that's going to multiply. Mm-hmm. Only reason a weevil gets into the flour is because it may punch a bag. The flour is already grinding up all the eggs, if there's any eggs or anything. So that will drive the gas out. What you're driving out is the oxygen. So if you have a little perforation where oxygen is in between the flour, or then the dry ice will push any oxygen completely out. And then, but it's covered with the bay leaves around, and this will push it out, and then you seal it. It will preserve it. So if I was doing, what I'm going to do is that put my flour in my plastic sack and put a few perforations, put my dry ice at the bottom, rest it on the dry ice, and then put the bay leaves around the plastic, and let the dry ice work its way through and push all the oxygen out.
And you get to seal it for a long time.
And then seal it.
That could take longer.
No, it's the same time. It makes no difference because it takes about 12 to 15 hours.
Well, I just felt the, you know, the content of the, you know, you're not having dry ice in layers like the right time.
Well,
I just thought it'd take longer.
It's taking on oxygen, so there is no way, because once the oxygen is starting to be pushed out, any bacteria is going to start heading to the surface. It's going to try to go out. So there is no way for it to survive. It died.
But fruit juice is not, you put that in cans.
Fruit juice is in cans will last because it's not going to, unless you bang it and puncture it, it's not going to corrode out.
It'd be better than jarred things, because you never know the
jars impact. Don't spoil if they're
if
the vacuum is not broken.
No, but I mean, you would almost have to wrap them up in newspaper now to be sure, you know, if it, the impact would hit our section.
Well, the thing in a container, when you have segregated box, that's the way you keep your liquid in glasses, and you're safer that way. Because then it's
it would be best to buy case.
That way you can serve water. I'm thinking of water supply.
Water supply is a very simple. Don't bother with the water that's going to be in the sink. There's no good to drink anyhow.
No, but I mean, that's
buy your distilled water. Throw a table according to 1 gallon. If it's like 5 gallon water, for every gallon you put 1 teaspoon of apple cider vinegar and 1 teaspoon of honey and dissolve it.
But that's not to be open because it's sealed. You wouldn't have to do it that.
You put it inside the water and seal it back.
You seal it back.
Oh, what? Put it in and seal it back.
Oh, what if it's best to get it sealed here?
We're gonna seal it for as distilled water because, well, if you distill, when you're ready to use it, you can add it to drink.
Yeah, well,
so you have your vinegar separate and your honey separate, and then add it when you're ready to drink.
Yeah.
You can buy the distilled water already pre-sealed and locked.
Yeah.
So it gets you distilled water. That's the only water you're gonna wanna have wrong anyhow. The rain water is no good.
Well, what's the matter with the spring water we got?
It's full of oxides, it's full of minerals and deposits. It's lots of chloride in it already.
Much cheaper.
Well, cheap, this has nothing to do with your health.
No, at that point you want to retain that price.
But how can it be that when you buy the still water sealed?
You seal and just keep it. You should have it in your house for yourself, for your protection. Because
I thought maybe you had to put that in it to preserve it.
Do you know what, my mother has an old cold
store. That, do you put that in to bring back the balance of the chemical and the minerals that the body doesn't have in the still water? The still water doesn't have no minerals. It's the only pure water there is. And the only minerals you're replacing there is from the natural minerals built up in the crystals of the honey by the bee. And a bee is not going to touch nothing that is polluted, no shape or form. Because when he does, he dies before he ever gets back from the, we call it, the flower to the hive.
He's going to lose all the bees.
If a bee was to take honey from an air that is sprayed. Mm-hmm. By the time he loads up with the pollen and gets back to the hive, he's a dead bee. That honey would be polluted. The other bees will know it. The scout bee is the one who gives his life for that. That's why they never go, they never spray the time when they're pollinating. There's no spraying going on when pollination is going on. They spray after pollination, not before pollination.
Is that pollen good for us? I know this man that he buys this pollen. It's very expensive. Takes it but just another day. He doesn't really have asthma allergies. He just does it. So it's good in your
head. Yeah, the pollen is good for
little bees. They come back with a big arms full when they get inside. It's gone.
No, you see, the bee, the scout bee, will locate a flower. That's the first thing he does. And the flower, when it comes up, you can't spray the flower because there's no necessity to spray. What are you spraying the plant is to prevent them from eating the fruit or eating the actual merchandise. You spray when the pollination is complete and when the fruit starts to come to prevent the insects from coming and eating the fruit. So it's after the blossom period, after pollination. And the thing, they spray that, they dust scrubbed it. So that keeps away the bugs. They know the exact time between pollination to the time. The farmer's been doing this for years. He knows exactly when to pollinate and when not to pollinate, when to dust scrub or when not to dust scrub, when to spray, when not to spray. So the bees, they know exactly when to go to the flower, because without the bee, the thing can't pollinate anyhow. It requires the bee to pollinate all our the insect to pollinate, do the pollination of the plant life. So the farmer is not that stupid. He's not going to spray the thing before then. Then he would have nothing to grow. He would have no crop. He's pretty smart too. You see, he's working with the bees. He's got to work with the bees. So your bees are fairly safe. Unless the bee comes across an area that is already sprayed, but that's an odd thing that happens. But when it does, he never gets back home in time with his pollen. The spray would kill him.
Mm-hmm. You see? Getting back to the swimming business, without heat, boy, is there, unless you just, well, soak the grain and grind it raw, but boy, our beans, it's going to be always an impossible situation to cook all these dry things. Right?
We have a special unit for cooking, it's called waterless cooking. It's a stainless steel waterless cooker where you can cook with a magnesium candle a whole meal in four big containers like that in a candle. You take that candle and just put it underneath this whole stainless steel waterless cooker and it'll cook the whole thing complete.
Can you buy them?
You get them.
I mean, it isn't in there.
No, the stainless steel units are, they're not out of date. The stainless steel is not aluminum, they're not, it's stainless steel.
They're just expensive.
Huh?
They're just expensive.
They're expensive because they're made out of 6-ply, not 4-ply or 2-ply. The one that you buy in the store is 2-ply.
Yeah,
and they are not waterless.
They've advertised as waterless.
Yeah, but they're not waterless. You could put them and see, it'll stick. A real waterless stainless steel cooking machine utensil is 6-ply. It's built to withstand that condition so it does not stick. These plies are set up, they're 6 in levels, you know, so that the food does not really stick. And once it heats, it sweats. Food perspires when it's heat up. And once you touch the lid and you feel that it's enough, hot enough not to burn you, then you keep the flame down. In a very minimal flame. And it cooks within its own moisture. Now to start it, you always put a little water that it doesn't stick. But you don't have to put a pile of water.
That's what I meant.
You see? Now, suppose you put the, all right, here you want to cook rice. So you just add enough water to cover the rice and to the height of your thumbnail. And then you bring the water to a boil and close it down. And it will cook in its own moisture. the minimal amount of liquids. All your vegetables or other grains will cook with the minimum amount of moisture because you'll cook by your own moisture and it'll expand. So you're using nearly one third less water. You're cooking with one third of the water.
I guess that could be bought like a restaurant supply place.
Well, it's very, they don't sell it in restaurant supply places. Well, we can get it for you because we deal with the manufacturers. The manufacturers are trying to sell it to the survival through the churches. Because they're the only people that are going to use it.
Will you be getting it in 2 months?
Yeah?
Do you think you can get it?
It takes...
You're not going to be out of food in 2 months.
You're not going to be out of food.
We're going to be out of electricity though when it's going to start coming
in. No.
I'm off the beam, huh?
You haven't got your information straight.
Okay.
I said from now to December, a lot of things are going to happen to put us in a position where we may not have the things we want. I don't say that we're going to have a whole panic system across the country. It's a matter of preparing for that period when the things start to shift that you can't buy these stuff.
Yeah, I'll get it
down now. But it will happen within 13 years from now.
Oh yes, it's happening already. The crops are dying already. This water here, the fall.
I thought the comet was.
Well, that's gone, you said.
Yeah, causing it.
It's causing it, but we won't feel the effects.
We will show you before you leave what the container looks like. What the stainless steel container looks like.
Mm-hmm.
It's a waterless cooking stainless steel machine for cooking, and we will show you the storage plastic pail for survival. These are survival units we are acquiring for our fellowship. We're acquiring it for ourselves too. Because this is what is. We've been checking in for years to find these things. Right now, we're still checking in. We're still doing checking on certain foods that are already canned, that are dried. They're already canned and dried inside. You don't, when you cut them open, they're good for a year when they're open. But the way they're made and sealed up, they're indefinite. And most of the stuff we're trying to get, that takes about 2 months delivery from the manufacturer because they have just put their drying plants. They're building it right there on the farm. They're natural vegetables and fruits that are growing. And they're putting the dryer right there and the canning machine right there. And they just started about 5 years ago to do it. So they don't have much of a start. But within 5 years, they can only guarantee anybody buying it at the rate of every 2 months. They're back order for 2 months. Now, they're primarily geared to sell all their production to two church groups.
Mm-hmm.
The two church groups that are already consigned, that have bought up their production,
mm-hmm.
and the company that is doing it is a church company. It's the Mormon Church and the Seventh-day Adventist Church.
Mm-hmm.
These two companies are owned by the churches.
Mm-hmm.
And their whole production is already pre-sold to their members. They're not concerned with the Presbyterian or the Methodist. You come in, the first thing they ask you, how do you know about their program? So, and they will sell you extras if they have. But you have to wait on the back order because they're primarily concerned with their own people first. So, I know the Mormons have already bought next year's crop that is going to be canned, and the Seventh-day Adventists bought up their crop because they grow all this stuff for their own people and they were putting up their own hospitals. Now, the Mormons have already bought caves, land areas with caves, and dug them out. And they have stored roughly in the neighborhood of millions of pounds of food. We're not talking of thousands, we're talking of millions of pounds of food that is in storage belonging to them only. It didn't belong to the US government. Their own land up in those mountains between New Mexico and Arizona, right into that area. All out from Utah, they're moving out of Utah anyhow. They know that's going on. They're moving all their records out from their temples. they're slowly dismantling it and moving it to underground temples. It's been going on in the last 8 years. Since McKay died and the new president took over, the new prophet, they're doing their work double the time now. They're working round the clock now. Before, they only used to work, let's say, 12 hours. When I was in Utah and worked up there, and I heard about the program the church was doing, it was only 12 hours. But from then, in 67, McKay died in 69. The new elder that took over and became president, new prophet, has put the whole program in 24-hour program. Everything is going 24 hours. They're farming 24 hours a day with lights. And they're packaging 24 hours a day. So they know what they're doing. The way their program is set up, that each person has got 1.5 year storage allocated already. Their wards, you see, they work with their wards and their deacons and their bishops, who goes around getting the people to start storage and all their members. So some, you know, there are two types of Mormons, those who stick with the church and those who like to give the church a hard time. It's interesting.
Some of them are foreign as a Mormon.
Yeah. But they're already, programs are set up for them, and their program is well laid out, because the land that they own up in those mountains is fantastic. It's all caves dug out. And you ain't going to find it so easy unless they know you're rich.
Yeah.
It's funny that Lewis Smith, when he saw Salt Lake City in a dream, that, well, I guess it was needed for that time, but that this wasn't also for 12 men.
Well,
it was for them then.
There are only two companies that own most of your veggie meat, that make you vegetable meat. Outside of General Food, has tried to buy into them. It's Worthington, the man Worthington, who formed the Worthington Company, was a Mormon who worked for General Foods as a chemical engineer. And he was a friend of Henry Ford. It was Henry Ford who got him interested in soybean. And ask him to experiment with soybean and see what he could come up in terms of plastics, not for food, for plastics, for less a lightweight car. And in his experimenting, he found that working with soybean and plastics, he did produce plastics, but he found out that he could produce now food that could be eaten from the byproducts of the soybean. So he left General Food and went into business for himself to produce his own products, and began to sell all his products to the Mormon Church, which began to store it. So you find most of the Mormons who go into the health food business, they're all carrying Worthington products. But he's selling other products to other health food stores. But most of those distributors are all Mormons. Now then, Seventh-day Adventist came along, and Loma Linda went into it. That's whole Loma Linda, California, is owned by the Seventh-day Adventists. They got acres upon acres of soybean growing to make byproducts of soybean. And they have their own hospitals. Now, they grow all their own stuff naturally, and they sell it right out through from their church. Now, there are only two churches that have what is called a survival program set aside for their parishioners. And that's been going on in the last 10 years. Storing it up. Now people are getting to the state of the panic, or they're not panicking yet. The high prices are the first indication, and the shortages are the first indication of what's coming.
Mm-hmm.
But who is going to be in the position to store? Where are you going to get the thing to store if they don't have nothing to store with? Then there was no crops to store. So I'm saying this, I'm aware of this, and Yogananda has been telling me this a long time, I should get it. The masters are telling us, and so we have to become aware of it. So we're now finding out where these things are, and we were trying to get land, and so that we'd have some place to store. But we're going to store now in containers, because we have to buy. By the time we grow food next year to supply us, this year crop couldn't supply a few people here in the fellowship. Mm-hmm. And it takes a long while to bring the ground into maturity to grow. So we are buying, I'm hoping to buy stuff in the store. Because the cost of it has gone up fantastic. When we could buy rice in 1969, when we started our first retreat here, we held our first retreat in the fellowship grounds, on the retreat grounds in 69. We were paying for brown rice, your best top grade brown rice, we were paying 15 cents a pound in 69. Try and get it for 50 cents a pound, you're lucky.
Yeah, it was a couple of weeks ago.
The stock market, our friend Mr. Thomas on the stock market, he's well aware of what's going on. He told me over the phone, he says, you're lucky if you, by Christmas you can get it for 70 cents.
Well, you know, brown rice you can't buy in the grocery stores. No, I mean, I thought, now that's weird, for about 4 or 5 months, no brown, I mean, you go to the health store, but not the grocery store anymore.
No, you're not going to get it in the grocery store, because there are only two people who can handle it for the supply of grocery stores, is the Comet. Comet brown rice, and that's the only other. The other one is White River from Louisiana. These are the only two they'll sell to the supermarket. But the rest of the brown rice is all bought up. Because who is buying up the rice first in the first place? Who goes in and buy the rice? There are only three people buying the rice, brown rice, right off the ground. Arrowhead Mills and the two churches, Seventh-day Adventists and the Mormon, they've already bought the crop before it's planted. Now the soybean crop for this country is already bought up by Japan. We don't have a soybean crop, no surplus, just for this 1973. Now you can get wheat as much as you want from Canada, but they're not going to let you bring it in, because we grow wheat here. The price would be prohibitive, unless Canada sells it cheaper to us. We grow wheat. It's when we things that we don't grow, they'll come in very cheap. As long as we are producing certain things, it'll be more expensive to come in.
Well, the Mormon Church is going to be reaping good karma then.
They are reaping good karma, mm-hmm. because they're taking care of their people. Mm-hmm. You know, a friend of mine says, now that I know the program, I better join them.
That's what we were thinking.
He literally did it. The fellows walk around and talk to them, the Mormon Church, mm-hmm. and he listened to them, and he and his wife joined, and his sons, they're all joining, they're going to live in Salt Lake City, because he's got 1 year supply of food for each family taken care of already.
Oh. See? They were at our house a few months ago.
So when they come along and they offer you the Book of Mormon, might as well join up, because you got your year supply. Guaranteed.
You also have to tithe.
Well, that's right. Okay.
That's your problem.
That's your problem, huh? But you see, you guarantee a year and a half of food.
But you go out there for it. You're not going to bring it into you. Uh-huh. You're going to bring it out to Utah or New Mexico. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
But we don't have to join them just for that. I think what we could do, as I said, we have the containers and we have the way to prepare it. And we know what supplies to get. And start to store the stuff ourselves. Not too long ago, I had some dried bananas. The most delicious thing you could ever taste. Can you put that with the... Right, eat it just like that.
Couldn't mix it with the grain.
Like the baby food dried bananas?
Mm-hmm.
isn't like our breakfast yesterday, we shouldn't get.
See, the dried bananas is tastier than the cooked banana, than the raw banana, because the raw banana still has the starch.
Should we, I don't know, improve the vitamin sector? Should we stock up on vitamin C pills?
Yes, you can stock up on vitamin C pills. You can stock up on your fruit juices, all your orange fruit juices. So you've got the lemon juices. Stock up on this.
Perfect. And
then vitamin
A and E
pills.
When you get these grains, can you put them temporarily into the freezer until you're ready to pack in a plastic container? Does that freezing, does that harm? Do you know what I mean? Until you've got enough to seal a package off.
Well, it's a dry grain.
Mm-hmm. So just leave it on the shelf.
Leave it on the shelf, and then when you put it, it hermetically release the gas, it will drive out the thing.
Well, this has to still rot, get stuff that yeast, and you know that yeast doesn't keep so much of this stuff in the cooler.
Well, they're keeping it in the cooler because of the general public.
They don't freeze it, though.
They don't freeze it.
It's cooler.
It's just irritated by cold air.
Is that okay then, not?
It's okay to put it back in the refrigerator for that. It's not frozen. When it's frozen, it's a different thing.
Yeah, I know. Do I have to? Well,
you see, a walk-in cooler, every place has a walk-in cooler for their dried foods. Now, the walk-in cooler is a place for the dried foods. What I'm saying is this, when that refrigeration goes off,
yeah.
It's there where it is. It's not protected. This is protected from the time the bag is open and emptied into a container where the dry ice dries out the oxygen and kills the bacteria.
I know that was my question.
And then it seals it.
Yeah. I was wondering about, I buy it from them because...
Those are walk-in cooler types.
Yeah.
That's not those are not frozen. It's all right to use.
Do I have to put it back on the refrigeration?
Yes, you have to put it back in the refrigeration.
Well, then, electricity won't really be affected for a while yet.
No, but we may say it's not affected for a while. Were you aware of the fact that New York was knocked out for how many days?
Oh yeah, but I might, the store, I have a refrigerator down, an old refrigerator, well, that I could plug in and store up things until I'm ready to get the container.
You see, once you switch off the power, your food starts decomposing. You don't have much time. They don't guarantee how much time you put back your power on. Big tile. They knocked out the power here one time because of a big thunderstorm.
Mm-hmm.
Six, 7 hours, no power. Now, this was just a small operation.
Mm-hmm.
We talk now of something that's broken by, they didn't have to go out for long hours in 2 days, 1 day or 2. All your food is melted up. Doesn't take too long to defrost the refrigerator.
This won't have impact at the end of November yet on electrical.
We don't know. This is no guarantee on that.
No.
No guarantee on that. The protection is what you want. Know that you have food that you can use that's not spoiled, that you'll have to throw away. You see, your lettuce and your celery,
I love my
there would be of very little value in their raw state and to grow them. The only way is to get them already dried and shredded up.
What's
that? Your celery and your lettuce and your squash and your pepper, they got to come in dehydrated states.
Yeah.
Once they're dehydrated and they're sealed in, in cans, they're coming made already. These campers, they realize that these people who have campers, bought their campers are all loaded up with that stuff because they go out in the woods.
That's what I'm going to the sports store because soup mixes and everything would be nice there.
Well, this is what the thing is all about, dehydrated stuff.
Maybe it's not really proper, but it's something.
Well, it doesn't lose the properties. Don't kill yourself, because all the proteins are there in a dehydrated state. When you buy food in a can, tomatoes in a can, versus dehydrated tomato slivers, there's a vast difference between the two. You only get 60% water and 40% solid in a pound of tomatoes in a can. 1 pound of tomatoes, they tell you there in the measurements, it's 60% water and 40% solid. So what are you paying for? You're paying for 40-60% water. Now, if you dehydrate a tomato, that means you're taking out 60% water immediately. Now, 40% solid is not going to fill up a pound can. It's only going to be 1/4 of that can. It'll take nearly 4 times dry tomatoes to fill a pound can. So the cost of that tomato, it'll be more. 1 pound of dried tomatoes is more than 1 pound of tomatoes.
Oh, yeah.
And with the liquid is there, 4 times as much. But if you add the water back when you're ready to use it, the tomato swells up back. So what have you got? You got 4 times the volume again. So this is what the dehydration process is. But this is already made into what is called 5 pound cans. In which way you can have a long storage life and a large quantity. I figure this, a person should at least take the basic grains, and one is rice. Two is corn. You see, you have your mung beans, your alfalfa. Sesame, your buckwheat, your rye, your whole wheat grain berries, just call it winter wheat, sunflower seeds. Your pinto beans, navy beans, kidney beans, dooky beans, black beans, red beans, all the bean family. We can get it for you in big bulk, which is wholesale at cost cheap, under what is called cooperative buying. See, you buy it in bulk and we can get it for you. This is what we're trying to do. So if the person orders, we can ship them. It's in big sacks. They come in 50-pound sacks. It's a whole lot cheaper to go buy it in a 50-pound sack for 4 or 5 people pulling their resources. And you go buy a few pounds in a supermarket, it'll cost you a fortune.
But if it was shipped here,
then
to our home, I mean,
well, it's only rerouted, that's all. There's the extra freight. But it's still cheaper than the end. Mm-hmm. Still cheaper. Because you have it. And you know it's organically grown. Mm-hmm. In the supermarket, you don't know that. Mm-hmm. And in the health food stores, they are not selling it in bulk. They're selling it in
package.
So if you're buying it in bulk, and so that is shipped to you in bulk, then you break it open and you just fill your pails. The pails aren't that heavy, they're light things.
Yeah.
So these can be shipped to you, you can even carry some of them with you, there's no problem, they're light stuff. Actually, they're so light, they fit into each other.
You carry them on the plane?
Oh yeah, you carry them on the plane.
I'll take some with me. Okay. You can't put them through the chute, so you have to carry them on the
plane.
Is there any way of labeling them to get to go through the luggage?
When you put it on this, on the what you call it, as an extra package, you tie it and you put it in an extra package, and the what you call it, they just they send it to, like how you send a set of clothes in a case. The lids are on already, so you just put, if you put on the lid, or to send them go without the lid separate. Take the lids off and you just put, keep the lids separate in one sack, and then your name and address in it, so when it goes to, you have the tag. Well, it's easy to carry that way. And there's no, they're so light, there's no costumes.
Tell me about the corn. I don't quite understand how you prepare the corn.
Your peas, you figure out your peas. Corn.
That's
grinding.
You
buy it whole.
Yeah.
Whole grain corn.
And that little strawberry, what do you do with that? The little ear, is that... Called strawberry corn.
Strawberry corn, you get it, they come in the, you just get it, grind it and grind it.
Just grind it. Mm-hmm. Well, that's cornmeal.
When you speak of a grinder, do you mean like the old fashioned meat grinder?
Yeah.
And salad.
But that plugs up awfully easy. I do that with any wheat and stuff. Boy, that's
you can do it with a coffee grinder. But the thing is this, if you get it already pre ground in coarse form, that's the way to buy them. We're buying it in 50-pound sack, pre-grown already, and coarse. They're coarse grain.
Well, then you would go to a mill. That's what they. You when you go to a mill and buy it that way.
Well, if you can get it from the mill, it's all right.
Yeah, we have mills here.
You could go to Penn's Creek.
Yeah, you go get it right there and do it. In your area, Pennsylvania, you people are much better off than most other people.
You've got everything you want. Because we have a big flour, we've got a couple big flour mills.
Well, right there, you can go and get it. It's right there. To me, people in Pennsylvania shouldn't worry. Because you got all, organic gardening has got its start in Pennsylvania. The Amish people are all organic farmers. If I was living in that area, I would worry. The only thing is the cold weather. That's something. Okay for the cold weather. But as far as getting the stuff organically from the Amish people or from the Quaker people, there's no, it's already natural and all it is stored in plastics. Now, you can't store meat unless you deep freeze it.
Who eats meat?
Well, there are lots of people who eat meat, you know. We have the veggie meat. If you're trying to get now, this they come in 50-pound sacks.
They get that stuff too from a Seventh-day Adventist, a lot of soybean imitation.
Yeah. It's worth it because I have eaten it already made up in beef stew.
My family don't like it because I made it once and they said, this is too much like liver. It was so good
when you're hungry.
Yeah, but it was funny.
I'll tell you something. My wife don't care for none of those what you call imitation meat products. Uh-huh. Because she says, if I'm going to eat meat, I'm going to eat meat, I'm going to eat imitations. Uh-huh. When she ate what was prepared as a beef stew that was already dehydrated, she didn't hardly know the difference. It was not doctored up either. It was naturally made from the naturals, and she liked it. She said this was good because it really got a taste a child would like it. And a child would eat it, you know, an adult would, because it's got a flavor. These are one things, the way they are being made now for a child. If a child would eat it, the adult is going to eat it. And a child don't eat it, he's going to starve. And you'd rather starve for a long time before you make a little man eat. The two people would not eat what they don't like. It takes them a long time to eat. Only under pressure they will use it. They'd rather die first. As a child and an old person. But the in-between age bracket will eat anything to stay alive. But not a child or an old person. They will rather not touch it. It's the phenomenon of the human body. Now, when they were making dehydrated foods, they considered these two factors, and they did it for survival. The Mormons knew this. The Seventh-day Adventists realized this. The doctors told them, you're going to make a survival food, you have to consider the adult, the aged, and the children. You have to make it sufficiently palatable at any age level. And then they came up with this meat. So I've tasted it myself, and I'm surprised and impressed that there is no way to say you can serve that to anybody. The odor, the taste is perfect.
And
it's all made from soybean, and there are no chemicals added to it. And they are taking it directly off from the farms there in Utah and in Colorado and Minnesota, all up in the Oregon belt, all in the California belt, wherever the Mormon church is, all in Wisconsin, all in the Idaho. So the Mormon church is all that area. All those farms are owned by Mormons. You'd be surprised. People think most of those farms are owned by the other churches. Most of those farms outside the state of Idaho and bordering the state of Idaho, the big ones, were already bought up by the Mormon people. They went in, gradually bought them up.
It's like the problem in Lancaster County around us, the Mennonites, we should buy up everything.
Yeah. Because they know that it's the
Well,
I wouldn't hate them for it, because they're forewarned is forearmed. And so we hate the person for that is pretty ignorant. They're aware of what is going to happen, and they don't take precaution. It's like the guy who designed the road for people to drive cars. He knew there were going to be accidents, so he designed a one-way thoroughfare. And even when he designed the one-way thoroughfare with no U-turn, he still has accidents.
Gotta work out their karma one way or the other.
So you see what I mean? Even though all that the survival program is set up, they can still get complications.
Well, just say, for instance, people are switching to be Mormons just for the sake of the survival business. Well, they're just, I mean, if the Mormons are living on good karma, these are trying to get on their fringe benefit, something else is going to happen to them, right?
Well, at least they'll get some
karma. They'll die crossing the street or something.
They'll get some karma.
Because they can't have the good if they're not ready for it.
But I'm saying this. The wise person is wise to put away at least a couple hundred dollars worth of food.
Yeah.
That's a wise person.
Yeah.
And if I were a wise person, that is what I'm doing, putting away a few hundred dollars worth of food in plastic storage plates. Even if there is no calamity or any kind of a calamity, you've still got a few hundred dollars worth of food that's going to be...